Robin Corn raised her boys in church. When her husband left, the church elder stepped in as the father figure the boys craved, but it was too late. Robin's son, Tim, had already turned to alcohol and weed. It wasn't long before heroin became his drug of choice. And when he overdosed, Robin saw the fruit of his life and how God was still working, even in Tim's death. Coming up after the sponsor.
This episode of the Charisma News Addicted podcast is sponsored by Courage for Life Ministries, creator of the first audio Bible recorded entirely with female voices. With a vision for taking the gospel to at-risk women in prison or those addicted or abused, this is a free iPhone and Android app featuring the entire Bible read in the comforting voice of a woman. Download it today at your app store or visit us at courageforlife.org, where you can also download free Bible study resources and devotionals. Find out more about how you can help support this amazing vision by visiting us at courageforlife.org or calling 404-791-7091. You can also email us at contact@courageforlife.org.
Welcome back. My name is Jesslyn Lancaster, and you're listening to Addicted on the Charisma News podcast. Joining me today is Miss Robin Corn. She's here to talk about her son, Tim, who died of a drug overdose in 2010. Now, just to be frank, I actually know Miss Robin. I grew up with Tim. We were in the same youth group. We went to Christian conferences together. I actually saw him get baptized. And once he died, Miss Robin said that she would share his story to prevent it from happening to other children. So, Miss Robin, welcome to the show today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you here. So first things first, why don't you tell us a little bit about Tim?
Okay. Tim was an outgoing, happy boy. We actually moved to the Birmingham area when Tim was, I believe, about 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And we had lived overseas before that. So one of the things with Tim is when we moved to the Birmingham area, he was going into a new school, middle school. And by that time, knowing middle school kids, a lot of the cliques had been formed. Mm-hmm. And it was more difficult for him to make friends. And what he found was that the kids that readily accepted him into the group were the kids that were doing drugs. Mm. And that was how he was introduced to drugs. He started at the age of 14 using alcohol as well as marijuana. Mm. And his experimentation escalated as things grew. Right about the age of 15, Tim's dad left us, and he had been an active part in Tim's life. So to go from a two-family income to a single mom income also impacted a lot of Tim's perspective on things. He was used to being able to have things, and things cut back quite a bit, and I know that had an impact. Plus, going from having an active dad in your life to somebody that was no longer around at all, I think, mm-hmm. created a lot of pain. Tim was active in the church youth group and Boy Scouts, and he had, as you had mentioned, he had accepted Jesus as a Savior and had gotten baptized, but he was having difficulty just accepting a lot of the changes that were going on in his life. And I think he started to lean more toward the alcohol and drugs. He actually at one time told me that he was not as susceptible to alcohol because it took too much for him to get drunk. So he leaned more toward the drug angle and started out with marijuana and eventually progressed to prescription pills, as well as he died of a heroin overdose. He was one of the first before the heroin epidemic became really big. He was on the beginning wave of the heroin epidemic in Shelby County here. And during that time, I did a lot to try to get Tim out of that drug lifestyle. I did drug testing at home. He was part of the juvenile drug court system. He was in, he also went to a rehab center during this time, and he was actually clean for about 9 months, and then started back up again with the heroin. And when you're dealing with an addiction like that, when somebody gets hooked on heroin or opiates, once you stop, if you start again, you start at the same level you stopped at, whereas with some drugs, it gets out of your system and you start at the bottom again. And that's not the same with the opiates. You start, and when you start, if you start back up again, you start at that same level and you just escalate higher and higher with that. And with an opiate addiction, it takes a good 2 years of being off the opiates before they're completely out of your system. Your brain develops a chemical and it creates the craving in your body about every 21 days. So it's a very difficult addiction to get over. Mm-hmm. And Tim, actually, during that time, he, like I said, he was in juvenile drug court. He had gone on and gotten his GED and had actually started college a year before his classmates that he would have graduated high school with did. So he was interested in pursuing a life. He didn't, just sit around and do drugs all the time. He wanted to be an auto mechanic, and he was going to school to learn to be an auto mechanic. He wanted to have his own shop, and he had goals to try to achieve, but the addiction just got a hold of him. And the last 6 weeks of his life, he had been arrested for some drug-related charges and was in jail for a while and then was in the work release program for a while before he was able to come home. And during that time, he had written me a letter, and he had told me that he was trying to get over the addiction, but it just got out of control and he wasn't able to handle it, even though he was trying to handle it himself. He didn't know how it had gotten so out of control. He just knew he was ready to be done with it and get on to a new point in his life. And he wanted to live a normal life again and not struggle the way he had been struggling. And he finally admitted to himself that he was a drug addict. And it took him a long time to get to that point. But he was ready to be clean, and he was, hoping he had been able to do it on his own, but he hadn't to at that point. And one of the things he had shared with his girlfriend during this time when he was in and out of juvenile detention, then he ended up in adult jail when he was 18, is that when you could stop, you didn't want to, and when you wanted to stop, you found you couldn't when you got in the whole addiction cycle. But Tim, while he recognized that he was an addict, he was very careful to try to prevent others from going down that path. He actually met with the assistant principal at his old high school. He'd go in and talk to her about once a month about what was going on locally in the drug community so that she could help other kids not go down that same path that he did. He also was very protective of his younger brother. Mm-hmm. He made sure that Ricky, his younger brother, was not exposed to what Tim was going through as an addict. And one of his friends had tried to get another friend, a girl that was a friend of Tim's, to do the heroin like they were doing. And Tim again stepped in and said, no, why do you want her to go down that same path that we're on? You know how awful it is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this I didn't hear until after Tim had died, and people would come up and tell me stories about how he was trying to intervene to stop people from going down the same path that he had gone down. But and there at the end, it took Tim a while. You know, he had been baptized. He had been going to church. I had him in counseling for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the counselor was a Christian counselor. And he finally called Tim on the fact that, you know, having an active drug life like that, he had really pulled himself away from God, and that, you know, he needed to get right with God if he was going to church and if he was going to take communion and be, you know, part of the church. He needed to make sure he was right with God and not just sitting there in the pew. Mm-hmm. And during the last couple months of his life, he had turned back to God, and he realized he needed God's help in trying to get out of the addiction process.
Mm-hmm.
And he would ask people for prayer, and he had kind of hit bottom at that point. For a while, he was really away from God, but I think being in an adult jail really kind of opened his eyes as mm-hmm. to, you know, where is my life going and what am I going to do with it?
You know, I think that's an excellent point, because even as you were talking, I remember at the time our youth group was going through a little bit of a revival, and one of the college interns said to me, you know, people are coming back to God that we never thought would come back to God. And in that, she was referencing Tim, and I just remember multiple people laying hands on him, three or four people, as he would just cry out to God. And so for me, this shows that the addiction wasn't necessarily a moral issue. It wasn't that he didn't want to be clean. He was deeply searching for God, especially at the end. And so another thing I thought about is when he died, we hosted the funeral at our church.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing kids that I had even gone to school with that were known drug addicts. And I looked at them and I thought, this is the first time these people have ever been in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking to one guy that I was friends with from my high school. And he openly said, you know, this is the only time I've ever been in a church. And that day the gospel was preached. And it's sad that Tim died, and it's still heartbreaking. But even in his death, he was still able to say, hey, there is a God. He's listening. And if I remember correctly, we actually had a ministry time at the funeral where we were able to talk and pray for people.
Yes. Yes, we did. And I know of two people that have actually gotten saved because of Tim's story. His girlfriend, for one,
mm-hmm.
actually came to Christ and was baptized there at church after he had died. And another woman that I knew, it was actually my ex-sister-in-law's mother, who was a professed atheist, heard Tim's story, and she knew Tim when
mm-hmm.
Tim was little, and she was actually saved before she died. So
mm-hmm.
he had some impact even after he was gone.
It's true. Now, talk to me a little bit about your role as a parent. When you first found out about his drug addiction, what were you thinking about, specifically faith-wise? What were some of the questions you were asking God?
Wisdom in how to deal with that, because when he got started on drugs, I was a single mother. So I was trying to figure out where to turn, what to do. And I actually went to a local drug rehab place, because the first time I found a big bottle of alcohol in the house and what I thought was marijuana, and I made an appointment and I took him to the drug rehab place and said, okay, this is what I found. What do I do now? And they helped talk me through it. Part of it was getting him into counseling, but Tim's behaviors, it continued to escalate, and it wasn't just the drugs. We also had behavior issues at school, and he ended up in alternative school and that type of thing. So I was looking for outside help, and as well as the church family. It was only by the grace of God that I was able to go through this. I had never realized how much I was on my knees before God, lifting Tim up, asking for, you know, help with him. And somebody I know, again from church, we were talking probably about 2 years ago, and she mentioned that she said it sounded like every Sunday I was up front getting prayer. And I wasn't ashamed to do that. I knew I needed God's help, and I was trying to reach out to all the areas that I could to get the help that I needed to help him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as things progressed, he ended up in juvenile detention. So then we got the whole legal system involved, and there was mandatory counseling with that for parents as well as children, and drug testing and that type of thing helped me learn things to help him. And one of the mantras I had during that time was tough love sucks. Trying to have the tough love and deal with an addict is very, very difficult, so that you don't end up enabling their addiction. Mm-hmm. And it was a hard time to go through, and to try to not focus completely on Tim, because I had another son and I needed to make sure Ricky was living as normal life as he could in the home of an addict.
Mm-hmm.
And stay on top of that. But it was, again, the court system, once Tim aged out of juvenile court and he had passed and had gone through rehab and was clean, that interim part was where it became more difficult, and learning, trying to figure out what can I do. The addiction started again. He still lived at home. And at that point, I knew it had progressed to the point that he could very well die from an overdose.
Hmm.
And so looking at things like, the intervention shows like they had on TV on doing an intervention like that, and the cost of it's astronomical. You'd have to mortgage your house, and take out a second mortgage to pay for it, and that type of thing. So, again, there was a lot of prayer going on just lifting him up and asking God to intervene, because it was difficult to find something that he would want to do as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like he said, when he didn't want to do it, he would try to look at going to groups and that kind of thing, but then he'd get sucked back in and wouldn't necessarily participate in the groups unless it was mandatory through the court system.
Now, you had mentioned a Christian counselor earlier. What sort of resources did, the Big C Church, the Body of Christ, help you with during this time?
They were really good, because when I was going through everything with Tim, I actually lost my job because of time I had to take off to deal with issues with Tim. The elders in the church stepped forward and supported me and emotionally and as a body. And they actually had Tim come in, and the elders, the men, spoke to him and talked to him and tried to get him, turned around.
Mm-hmm.
So they intervened. There were several men in our church that made time to come and go to activities with Tim and Ricky, take them out and do things with them, so that, they weren't just with their single mom all the time, but they actually went out and did guy stuff. I know they went and saw monster trucks, I think, at the BJCC.
I remember
stuff
that,
like
actually.
That. Yeah, guy stuff. And that was so comforting to me to know that I wasn't alone with that, because a parent of an addict, a lot of times you feel like you're all alone out there and you're ostracized, because if you haven't gone through it, then people on the outside will think, well, you should have done this or you should have done that, until they've walked in your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Or until they've had those problems. I actually had a neighbor apologize to me about 5 years after Tim died. And he said, I judged you when you were going through what you went through. And he said, I had no idea. And he said, now I'm going through difficulties with my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand what you were going through. And he apologized for judging me. And
wow.
A lot of that is out there. If you haven't walked in those shoes of having a child or a family member that's dealing with an addiction, a lot of people tend to think you haven't done enough, mm-hmm. and a lot, it's out of your hands. You can't control someone else. All you can do is pray for them and offer them, you know, what things are out there mm-hmm. to help them try to overcome their addiction.
Absolutely. And I remember during this time as well, our church offered a daycare program, summer camp program, and you and I both worked. We were in rooms that were side by side with the little adjoining door. And I just remember right. you would come in so exasperated, and you just had no idea what to do or how to handle it. So with that being said, what would you say to encourage other parents who are walking through this right now?
You're not alone. And my recommendation is to try to get hooked up with some group or organization to help you keep your thinking right mm-hmm. in dealing with the addiction that's impacting your family, whether it's going to a counselor. There are groups like Al-Anon if you're dealing with an alcoholic addiction. In the area I live in, there's the Addiction Prevention Coalition. You can get involved with that and educate yourself on what the addict is going through, and then also what your role is, because it's so easy for a parent to get sucked in and be an enabler and, you know, oh, they're just going through a rough time and I'm going to help them and baby them. And there's some thinking that's heading back that way, but I'm not a believer in that mm-hmm. you need to have the tough love and you need to set boundaries that you need to stick to. And, you know, I, for one, my younger son knew that I would not put up with things, and I actually had to call the police mm-hmm. on Tim. And for a while, I felt like I needed to keep donuts in the house all the time because the police were here so frequently. Mm-hmm. But you need to realize you're not alone. There are other people going through this, and they can help you out there with resources and just be a sounding board for you and provide the moral support that you need.
Mm, that's so good. What would you say to the body of Christ for them helping people who are either addicts or parents of addicts who are wrestling through this? What can Christians do to help?
I think they can certainly pray, but I think they need to be there to offer moral support. Mm-hmm. I for one, our church was fantastic when I was going through this. I had the support of the elders in my church. They stepped up as a single mom was having difficulty with my child. They did not ignore that, and mm-hmm. they stepped in and they helped me with that in dealing with my son. And, you know, the women of the church surrounded me with love and just comfort during that. I can remember I had my 50th birthday, and Tim ended up going into juvenile detention the night of my 50th birthday. But there were a group of women that were taking me out to just celebrate with me.
Wow.
And it, you know, it gave me the love and support I needed to know I wasn't alone and I wasn't, you know, the only one trying to muddle through this. I had people that I could call on when things happened. When Tim overdosed and didn't die, I had a friend that I was able to call, and you know, she met me at the hospital, and it was that kind of support to be there and not be judgmental.
Mm, that's really powerful. You've actually answered all the questions I have for you. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
Just that God is in control with this, and he can help you through it, and he can bring your addict through it. There are positive stories of people overcoming their addiction and going on with life. Tim's story is tragic in that he died at the age of 18 mm-hmm. from a drug overdose, but there are ways, you know, it can be stopped and it can be prevented, and there is hope, and God can walk you through it. And that's one thing I have found since Tim's death, is that if it weren't for the grace of God, I don't know where I'd be, because I interface a lot with parents who have lost children for various reasons. And those that don't have a strong relationship or faith in God really lose hope. And it's a loss like this is so, so devastating, but it's much more if you don't have the hope and the grace of God to support you through it.
Wow. Thank you, Miss Robin, for stopping by and sharing what happened in your life and Tim's story. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. For more shows like this, be sure to check out cpnshows.com. And if you like us, rank and review us on iTunes. Give us 5 stars because we love you guys. If you do this, then we can continue to spread the gospel. I'm Jocelyn, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.